There is a growing movement of business owners who know that better isn't always bigger. Welcome to the Company of One podcast. I'm your host, Paul Jarvis, your ride or die for challenging the idea that growth is the only byproduct of success. The show picks up where my book, also called Company of One, leaves off, with more stories, more ideas, and more research into why staying small is the next big thing in business.
Our volume of sales could probably increase by an order of magnitude, and it wouldn't really change how things are set up for this. So that's been huge for us.
In this episode, we'll hear from Dan Provost, 50% of the Studio Neat team. They started in 2010 with a piece of hardware called a Glyph that mounted a smartphone to a standard camera tripod. They're aiming for about $10,000 for a campaign on Kickstarter and ended up reaching almost $140,000. They then rebooted the Glyph in 2016 and raised $208,000, passing their $50,000 goal in less than a day. Their ridiculous success on Kickstarter isn't the story here, though. What's interesting about Studio Neat is that the company is just two people, Dan and his business partner, Tom. That's it. Their office is in a garage behind Tom's house in Austin, Texas. They've been able to build a company of one with two people, shipping thousands of orders at a time after successful crowdfunding campaigns, and make the whole thing work without sacrificing having good lives. They embody the ideas and mindset of thriving as a company of one.
My name is Dan Provost. I'm one half of Studio Neat, and we make tools for people.
The first question I had was pretty obvious. How do they run a physical product business with two people? Seriously, just two people. And what has changed as their order volume has increased?
I think the key reason we've been able to stay small intentionally, and it's literally just the two of us at Studio Neat, is we outsource as much as we can. One of the key things we outsource is the order fulfillment. We use a 3PL, a third-party logistics company to ship all of our products. So this is huge. This is something that we did from the very beginning, because back in 2010 with our first Kickstarter, we had about 5,000 pre-orders. And so we knew we couldn't fulfill all those ourselves, or it would take a very long time. So we kind of out of the gate needed some extra help there. And so basically by having fulfillment and shipping taken care of, you know, we don't have to have a warehouse, obviously, and we don't need to staff up to send orders out. We have someone else doing that. And so we have it set up as such that orders come into our website and then they are automatically sent to our 3PL and then they fulfill the order. And so it's totally hands off, aside from some, you know, minor customer service here and there if there's a problem. But it basically means our volume of sales could probably increase by an order of magnitude, and it wouldn't really change how things are set up for this. So that's been huge for us.
Which is interesting, because I'm the first to admit that company of one principles and operations are far easier to set up and manage if you have a digital product company, so software and that sort of thing. So examples like Studio Neat doing this with actual physical products that are manufactured and ordered and shipped and supported is incredibly interesting. And what's more interesting is how Dan thinks of his business. It's a design business for consumer products. And because it's a design business, he's able to outsource everything else to trusted partners, so he and Tom can focus on designing new products and updating existing ones. They don't have to worry about packing boxes with glyphs to deliver to 5,273 Kickstarter backers, or to make sure that the machines that are making those glyphs and other products are running smoothly. They're simply responsible for coming up with product ideas, designing those products, and making sure their customers are happy with them. I wondered, though, would they ever need more humans to help with the design aspect of their business?
I had a professor in grad school who had a small, kind of like a game design studio, and he had a bit of advice that has kind of stuck with me. He said, the moment you hire your first employee, everything changes. And what he meant by that is you're no longer just kind of a scrappy company that can, you know, you can maybe sacrifice your salary here and there to kind of make things work. You're now responsible for someone's well-being, basically, their source of income. And so I think it really affects your decision-making process, and it possibly, you know, pressures you into doing things and making business decisions that you wouldn't necessarily want to take. So Tom and I have been super hesitant to hire an employee for that very reason. And we've done exactly what I just said. There's been some kind of lean months where we've had to postpone our salary because we're a little bit cash poor. That flexibility has been really helpful to us. Obviously, we don't want to make that a habit, but that would be really tough to do when you start having employees. So I think that's been essential for the way Studio Neat is run, is to just be a two-person operation, basically, just the two founders.
This personally resonates with me because I don't ever want to feel the weight of responsibility that I would have if I had employees. So there's this daydream slash nightmare that I routinely have in my mind whenever I think about this, where I've hired people, they have families and pets and mortgages and a kid at an expensive college getting a degree that she'll then use to save the world. And in my imaginary business, it's had a few slow months and I have to let some employees go and I can't because I'm sobbing uncontrollably. So I get what Dan is saying here. And I think a lot of folks do. I think a lot of us just want to be responsible for our own work and running our own business. And that's it. And that to me feels like freedom. And freedom is why I like to have a company of one. So finally, I was curious what Dan thought about profitability and how it creates companies that can exist indefinitely.
I remember when I was working just a regular job back in, you know, 2009, 2010, before we started Studio Neat, I read the book Getting Real by 37 Signals. And then, you know, and even more importantly, an influential Rework, which was their follow-up book to that. And I think it had a real impression on me of this kind of way of doing business that seems really simple and obvious, which is basically just have a business and make things that you sell for money and that are profitable. And especially kind of being surrounded, at least, you know, kind of in the tech world and in the news, all of this kind of like VC and startup-y world, it was like a glass of, you know, fresh water, this idea of just, hey, maybe you don't have to do that and you don't have to worry about this crazy accelerated, you know, growth super fast and getting big as quickly as possible, and just have a simple company, have a product that you can sell for profit and just do that. And so that is what we have tried to do. We've never even considered any kind of VC investment or anything. And you know, investments are interesting beyond the monetary aspect, as you know, you can pull in a mentor who can kind of help you with business things that you wouldn't otherwise know or make connections and this and that. So this is not to say that VC is just inherently bad, but for us, you know, kind of going back to the previous question of just wanting to stay as simple as possible and stay just the two of us, is I think it affords us a ton of freedom and agility to kind of make decisions quickly and make the products we want to make and not have to answer to anyone. And, you know, it gives us the freedom to make mistakes and recover from them. And so, you know, another thing that ties into that is just having kind of a long-term plan where, you know, sometimes Tom and I ask ourselves, are we going to be doing this in 10 years from now? Like, is it still going to be just the two of us, you know, brainstorming ideas and making products? And, you know, who knows? But I could totally see that being a possibility where this is just a sustainable model of just two dudes, you know, coming up with ideas that they can sell for a profit and just keep doing that over and over again. So it is really important that we established a model and a way of working for us that was kind of built for the long haul. So we didn't have this stress of, you know, intense growth and all these other things that come along with having the pressure of investors. And so, you know, I think in some ways we kind of maybe stumbled into that when we were starting out, not really knowing what we're doing. But every day and every year, I feel more and more confident in that decision to just, you know, the kind of small on purpose approach to things has worked really well for us. So I think we're just going to keep doing it until it stops working.
Company of One is hosted by me, Paul Jarvis, and is based on my book, also called Company of One. You can find my book, which is available for pre-order right now on Amazon. The book will be released on January 15th, 2019. If you'd like for me to pop into your inbox when new episodes of the show are available, you can hop on the mailing list at ofone.co. And if you enjoyed this episode, please do me a solid by leaving an honest but favorable rating and review on iTunes. Thanks again for listening to the Company of One podcast.